Good morning, everybody. Can I just get an indication from the people there of that? If you would just mind, it's an open parliament, so we don't have a problem. We welcome the fact that you're here, but just for our records here, it would help to know which organizations you are from.
We both are from the German Council at the NK Town.
Thank you very much. The other people we know. Honourable members, our agenda for today, I would seek your permission that I add towards the end. The first is that we would do the welcoming, which we have done now. Welcome to all of you. It's a pleasure to see you here. We have one apology. It's a written apology that we have here from the Honourable Mate Vula. I would ask that you condone that apology. Then we will have the presentation. After the presentation, we will do the minutes, and with your permission, this is what I want to ask. You give me 3 minutes to just deal with correspondence. For the moment, we'll just share it with you for information. It's letters that I've received from the chairperson of the NCOP on matters that this committee would have to deal with. Do we have any other apologies? No. Okay. The Tripartite Free Trade Area is a very important development in terms of trade and economics. Members, at the end of the presentation, I will request you that we approve a report. We approve the agreement. The approval of the agreement will then have to be presented to the chairperson of the NCOP is a process that we have gone through. I would then request the DDG, or chief director, the director on the TFTA to do the presentation for us, and we will engage with your presentation once you have concluded. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Wamkela Mene. I'm the Chief Director responsible for South Africa's trade negotiations with our African trading partners, in this case the Tripartite Free Trade Area, and also in a different context, I'm the chief negotiator for the African Continental Free Trade Area. Honourable Chair, we presented this presentation for your information to the Portfolio Committee 2 months ago. And we were requested to provide further information, which we have. It's in the revised, so this is a revised presentation. This is just for your own information. The request that the Department and Cabinet has put to Parliament is for this agreement to be ratified, so that South Africa can deposit the instrument of ratification as soon as possible under our law. The presentation will cover the background, Chairperson. I will also cover the substance, a little bit of the substance of what it is that we have negotiated, the risks and benefits for South Africa, and then I will make some concluding observations. Honourable Chair, the tripartite free trade area was launched in 2015 in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt by a summit of heads of states of the tripartite free trade area, which comprises SADC, COMESA, and the East African Community. And these three regions, the rationale was one, political economy considerations, and two, to advance regional integration in our region. The agreement was signed by having been concluded in May 2017. Minister Davis signed the agreement in July 2017 in Uganda. Thus far, of the 26 member states, 22 have signed, as I say, including South Africa. The agreement requires 14 member states to deposit their instruments of ratification before it enters, so that it can enter into force. At the moment, it is only Egypt and Uganda who have deposited their instruments of ratification, so the number is relatively low, and we as South Africa would like to, as I said earlier, within our law to move quickly to ratification so that we can signal commitment to the agreement and the broader objective of regional broadening our regional integration. The tripartite free trade area is anchored, Chairperson, on an approach to trade negotiations that as a department we refer to as a development integration approach. And that is to say that we have moved away from the classic free trade area approach to negotiations that emphasizes on market access and mercantilism. The approach that we have developed under the leadership of Minister Davis is to integrate the anchors that I refer to, market integration, which is the free trade area itself, integrated with industrial development and infrastructure development. What we observed is that in the past, free trade areas that comprised only market integration don't yield development dividends. In terms of infrastructure and, as I say, industrial development. And the emphasis for us here in this free trade area is that we are able to develop regional value chains within the tripartite region and that we at various stage of the regional value chain, we are advancing to production of value-added goods. That is the underlying development objective. The purpose, Chair, is to harmonize the trade regimes. We had multiple membership of regional economic communities, as you are aware, Chairperson. So we aim here to harmonize those three different trade regimes into a single rule book for the tripartite area to address supply-side constraints, to address the issue that I've just alluded to of the need to industrialize our region, to overcome smallness of our economies, and of course to achieve economies of scale within the region. The ratification that we have put before Parliament is, it relates only to the trade part, the market integration pillar, the industrial development and infrastructure development pillars do not require ratification. Those are just ongoing cooperation programs in the two pillars themselves. The key features of the tripartite free trade area are, in our view, the recognition of differentials in levels of development, which again is an indicator of the fact that we have moved away from those classical free trade areas to free trade areas, to negotiating free trade agreements that recognize differences in levels of development. And in the text itself, in the agreement, we have provisions that take account of special and differential treatment, flexibility for least developed countries, in some cases flexibilities for Indian Ocean economies, such as the Seychelles, for example, a country that has a population of less than 100,000 people, 30,000 working people. So very, very small populations. So we have to take those unique circumstances, we have to take them into account from a development perspective. We also have the variable geometry regarding the pace of liberalization. So you move as quickly as you are able to as a region, as SADC in this case, or as SACU. And you undertake your tariff phase down in the case of tariffs as fast as you are able to. So it is not a top-down approach. It is the region and the country itself that takes a sovereign decision about how quickly it wants to, it is able to liberalize its trade. The other feature is that we are building on the existing acquis of the regional economic communities. In other words, we do not expect that what we have achieved in SADC will be negatively impacted by the tripartite free trade area, nor do we expect that any member of SADC will then use the tripartite area to renege on some of the commitments that it has made in SADC. So there's very, very clear provisions and commitments in the agreement that underscore the point that there is to be no backtracking. And then, of course, the main objective, the main feature is creation of a single market in the tripartite area, so that our goods and services can move seamlessly under the same rules throughout the three regions. We see a number of benefits, Honourable Chairperson, for the agreement. This region has a combined a GDP of in excess of $1 trillion US dollars. Combined population of approximately 626 million people, which is just over half the entire population of Africa and Africa's economy. It has some of the fastest growing economies in the world. You will remember, Chair, that in 2016, The World Bank estimated that of the 10 fastest growing economies in the world, six were in Africa. And of those six, Rwanda, Ethiopia, Tanzania are some of the ones that are in the region that we are negotiating with. So it is a region that is economically dynamic and very vibrant. It is important for South Africa to engage in that with those economies for for our own development and growth. It will enable us to build on the current share of the African market and to expand beyond SADC and have access to a larger and a more integrated regional market, which of course has a positive spillover effect on our industrial development, investment and job creation in South Africa. We also have seen evidence in other parts of the world that market integration and regional trade agreements of this nature do have a positive impact on intra-regional investment, whether you are talking about investors coming in from the EAC region into South Africa or vice versa. We will negotiate an investment protection chapter under the agreement, and the investment protection chapter will be modeled on our own Protection of Investment Act. It will have the features, the main legal features, such as state-to-state arbitration, and of course other elements of natural justice, such as having your, if you are an investor and you want to initiate a dispute and you do so in court of first instance, you don't agree, you have a right of appeal, and then and the other elements included in our Protection of Investment Act, we will negotiate that that they be captured in the tripartite free trade area investment chapter itself. This agreement will provide our exporters of both investment and of both capital and goods with legal certainty and predictability of the market in the tripartite region. At the moment, we do not have a we are trading with for example with Kenya. We are trading with Kenya under WTO rules, under MFN rules. So where a dispute arises between ourselves and Kenya, we have to rely on WTO rules. And of course, WTO rules don't include investment, which means that we don't have a forum for engaging Kenya or any other country outside of SADC in resolving disputes that are outside of WTO. So this will provide us with an avenue and a platform for speedily resolving disputes that may arise. It will provide legal protections for South African exporters by way of the dispute settlement that will be delinked from national courts. So if you are a South African a trader or exporter, you will not have to go to a court in the DRC or in Rwanda or in any other tripartite jurisdiction to have your matter adjudicated upon and resolved. You will be able to seek relief for that dispute, resolution of that dispute, from within the agreement itself. So the agreement creates an adjudicating panel that will comprise international experts on international law and international investment law as the issue may determine. As I said earlier, there's a possibility of creating a single rule book for trade, investment, intellectual property rights, and competition, which will boost, in our view, will boost intra-regional trade in the tripartite area. The potential threats to South Africa are based on past experience, and we will also mention how we hope to mitigate these threats. One of the main threats is transshipment, because in a free trade area, you rely on the customs authorities of the countries that you're negotiating with to prevent goods coming into the free trade area itself and getting preferential treatment which they are not entitled to. So because we don't have complete control of the customs authorities of other countries, we perceive this issue of trans treatment as a risk, because we rely entirely on their capacity to regulate the goods that are coming into their market. There is also a possibility of a dumping of substandard goods into the South African market, and that could happen through the free trade area itself. And this is something that SARS is quite vigilant about and always monitoring it very, very closely. But it is a possibility. And it is a risk that that we have to be very open about. We know cases where, for example, Grandpa, the tablet, the powder Grandpa has come into the South African market through the borders and has found to actually be substandard upon inspection by the relevant authorities in South Africa. There is a risk of non-implementation of commitments by our regional partners, which of course has implications for preferential access for South African exports, because if other countries don't live up to their commitments, it means that the preferential market access that we had negotiated is undermined. There are cases of countries that are genuinely not able to, because of their economic circumstances at the time, they may be faced with balance of payments problems, they may be faced with macroeconomic challenges at a particular given time, and they're not able to live up to their commitments. And in those cases, in the agreement, we make provision for such cases, and those countries are required to come forward and to be transparent about the problems that they are experiencing, and a negotiated, an interim solution is then negotiated under the agreement. There is a risk that the barriers to trade on movement of goods, if we do not proceed in parallel with the pillars on industrial and infrastructure development, that the barriers to trade that we are trying to reduce, that they will actually remain, or that there will be no significant impact if those three pillars are not proceeding at the same time. The mitigation of these potential risks that I've just said on this, the most immediate point that I've just made, Chairperson, is the need to move with the development integration approach, to move precisely the same time in parallel tracks, so that we broaden the benefits. Thank you. So that we broaden the benefits to all tripartite members. We will need to have a very effective customs cooperation to prevent transshipment, which may undermine our regional productive capacity. And the agreement has established a platform for customs authorities to enter into cooperation arrangements, so that SARS and their counterparts across the tripartite region are able to develop a common working methodology for how to combat transshipment, for example, or the issue of substandard goods. Enforcement of agreed rules of origin to ensure that the preferential access is granted to the countries that qualify for it. We have to make sure that the rules of origin that we are negotiating are effective, and that they target specific products that will actually encourage industrialization in the tripartite region. We will have to make sure that we mitigate the risks by having quality infrastructure institutions and implementation of our safeguard provisions. By safeguard provisions here, we mean trade remedies, anti-dumping, countervailing measures, and so on. We have made provision in the agreement for capacity building and sharing of experiences and expertise amongst our regional institutions in order to promote the trade that we want to boost under the agreement. This slide is to slide 10 is to give you a sense of the trade profile and the export profile of the countries that South Africa trades with in the tripartite region. It will not surprise you to see that, of course, the countries that with whom our trade figures are substantial are countries that are in the SACU region, so Botswana, Namibia, and then, of course, the others outside of SACU, Mozambique, Zambia, and so on. Those are the countries that receive the bulk of South Africa's exports. Our trade with tripartite countries represents about 16% of South Africa's total trade with the rest of the world. So it is quite a strong export profile to the countries in the region. And most of these exports are value-added goods. There are some primary commodities, primary products, but it's largely value-added goods. In 2017, our total trade with the tripartite countries was in excess of $27 billion. And the majority of the trade is with SADC countries, as I've just said, and then followed by Egypt, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Uganda as some of the strong export destinations. South Africa's exports to Kenya account for 3.3% of the tripartite region, and we receive in turn about 2% of tripartite imports coming in from Egypt. In terms of the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, in terms of the negotiation process itself, we as the lead department are supported by the relevant line function departments. I've mentioned SARS, the Department of Agriculture, where there are issues of sanitary and phytosanitary standards, and then of course DECO as the lead department in terms of interface with the rest of the world. And in accordance with the Constitution, our negotiating positions are informed largely by the NEDLAC process. From time to time, we do receive representations from companies or individuals or interested parties who may not necessarily be represented in NEDLAC. And of course, as a matter of law, of legal requirement, we do consider those representations. But the formal legal consultative mechanism is where we receive our negotiating positions is a NEDLAC process. This agreement has been reviewed by the Department of Justice, and the Department of Justice has confirmed that the agreement does not conflict with municipal law. It is not in conflict with South Africa's domestic laws, and therefore they have endorsed it for signature and ratification by Parliament. DECO has similarly confirmed that the agreement is not in at variance, nor does it violate South Africa's other international agreements. So from constitutional law point of view, we have received the requisite confirmations. South Africa was the coordinator, or is, we remain the coordinator of for SACU in the negotiations, which means that Minister Davis leads the negotiations on behalf of SACU with his counterparts in the tripartite area. We are not going to be negotiating with all tripartite countries. What we have agreed is that we will negotiate with countries with whom South Africa has no existing preferential trade arrangements. For example, we're not going to negotiate with Zambia, but we will negotiate with Libya, Egypt, South Sudan, Ethiopia, countries with whom we have no existing trading arrangements. So that goes. This goes back to the point that was made earlier in the presentation about building on the acquis of the existing regional economic communities. At the moment, we are negotiating with the East African Community, which is Kenya, Rwanda, Burundi, Tanzania, and I mentioned Rwanda. Those are the countries that comprise the East African community. We are negotiating a tariff liberalization with them. That negotiation is at an advanced stage. We hope to conclude by the middle of next year. At the same time, we're negotiating tariff liberalization with Egypt. That negotiation is not as advanced as the negotiation with our counterparts in the East African community. When we conclude these negotiations, we will then, as has been agreed in the modalities of the negotiations, we will then proceed to negotiate with other countries. In this case, it will most likely be Ethiopia. That is the other big market that where there is a substantial South African business investor presence, and also where South Africa exports to, but not under favorable terms, because the Ethiopians are not a member of the WTO, and at the same time, they are not, they are of course not in any free trade area with us. So it is an important market for us to anchor in a legal arrangement. There is also a parallel track on the negotiation, and that is the movement of business persons, and there will be a slide on that that will elaborate on that. And as I said earlier, there's ongoing work in industrial development, identification of industrial projects in the region, development of targeted value chains. And one of the objectives for South Africa is that in the value chain, where we don't want to dominate the entire value chain in the region, so we should be able to make space for other countries as we advance in the value chain. So it is a critical pillar of the agreement. And then, of course, infrastructure development, that work is ongoing, and it is building on SADC's infrastructure development projects and work program, and it also complements the African Union's work program on infrastructure development. Phase two of the negotiations is intended to cover trade and services, intellectual property rights, investment, and competition policy. So that is what we will tackle next when we conclude the goods pillar or chapter of the agreement. just to give you a sense, Chair, of the legal text, where we stand in terms of the text, everything has been negotiated, and as I said, our chief state law advisors, both at DECO, have reviewed the agreements. We are continuing with negotiations on rules of origin, because as you know, product-specific rules of origin, negotiating rules of origin can take over a year, and we are now at about 60 to 70% concluded on rules of origin. I did mention the variable geometry aspect of moving as fast as you can or as slow as you can, as the case may be, and that we want to conclude the tariff negotiations by early next year with Egypt and with the EAC. The one question that is relevant and is always asked, and that is, at what point does South Africa enjoy, when do we start enjoying the preferential treatment? We will enjoy the preferential market access the day when the 14th member state has deposited its instrument of ratification. So when the agreement becomes law in the 14 countries that have ratified it. The implementation of the agreement will require that SARS may have to make their Customs and Excise Act an amendment to the Act to make provision for the new tariffs that we will have agreed to. This is a matter that SARS does as a matter of course, and it includes rules of origin, new rules of origin that will be agreed to, and the certificates that capture that, and the requisite import permits, tariff rate quota management systems, all of those things. SARS has the necessary capacity to put them in place for all new agreements. And we expect that other countries, other tripartite member countries, will do the same thing as we do. In other words, they will establish the requisite infrastructure to give meaning and implementation to the agreement. We then also work very closely within the DTI. There is a division called, as you know, honourable members, Trade Invest South Africa. And within Trade Invest Africa, there is a dedicated branch that is called Trade Invest Africa. And we complement our mandates in the sense that as trade negotiators, we then pass, once the agreement is ratified, we pass it on to them, and we work with TISA and Trade Invest Africa to inform the South African public or stakeholders about the agreement, the benefits of the agreement, how they can access the new markets, trade promotion, roadshows. All of these things are things that we do in order to give commercial meaning to the agreement when it enters into force. I did speak, Honourable Chair, about rules of origin. This is a very important chapter of the agreement because it prevents transshipment of goods, and it ensures that the goods that come into South Africa, into the South African borders, at the tripartite preferential rate, are the goods that are eligible for that. So we use the rules of origin, we apply rules of origin to prevent and to mitigate against third-party countries, or third parties rather, getting access into the South African market that they are not entitled to under the agreement. The other important part of rules of origin is they are a tool for industrial development. If there is sugar that is coming in, for example, from a third party, that sugar, unless it meets the rules of origin, the very stringent rules of origin of the agreement, which typically would require that there has to be refinement of the sugar or processing of the sugar to up to a predetermined threshold, that in and of itself is a process that encourages industrial development in the region. And of course, this is applicable to other products, not just agricultural products. It could also be motor vehicles where this issue of rules of origin becomes a very critical pillar, becomes a very critical part of industrial development. Edible oils is another example is solved. All of these products are products that are also subject to very stringent rules of origin. We, as SACU and South Africa, take a different approach to our counterparties in West Africa. It's not relevant for this presentation. I'm just making an example. Most countries in West Africa, their approach to rules of origin is general rules. When a product comes into an ECOWAS market, there is very, very minimal transformation of that product that takes place. In their view, it is because they don't have an industrial base. They don't have a manufacturing base. Whereas by comparison, SACU and Southern Africa has a relatively developed industrial base and manufacturing base, so we do have the capacity to refine products or to work products and to do what we call value addition to products when they enter our markets in Southern Africa. So this is a really critical part of the agreement. The agreement, of course, will facilitate the movement of the smooth transiting of goods, the customs procedures that I referred to, and in the customs procedures and in the movement of those goods, our customs authorities will again relate to rules of origin to determine the qualification of the product. Now, moving on, honourable members, onto the movement of business persons. The heads of state had agreed in Egypt that there will be this will be complemented by a side agreement, the movement of business persons agreement is what we refer to it. It is not part of the Free Trade Area Agreement, and our colleagues at the Department of Home Affairs have been leading the negotiation on behalf of South Africa. So I will speak to it, but the specific details in terms of the negotiating positions, it is our colleagues at the Department of Home Affairs who are leading. So it is limited to temporary movement of business visitors, traders, and investors for up to 90 days per calendar year. In other words, you as the owners will then be on you as a business person to prove that you qualify for entry into South Africa for these 90 days under the conditions that will be set out by in terms of domestic law. By South African immigration law, you will qualify for up to 90 days. There is a possibility of an extension of the period, but again, this will be subject to South Africa's immigration law. The movement of business persons visa will make provision for entry into force for entry visas that are issued for a minimum period of 1 year in accordance with domestic law. Some countries are not able to provide a period of more than a year at a given moment in time, which is why it was agreed that it would be a minimum of a year in accordance with domestic law. The agreement that encourages issuing of visas within 7 days, but of course this can be extended to allow for investigations if the immigration authority determines that a particular case requires further interrogation. The movement of business persons agreement acknowledges the need for member states to regulate movement of persons for public security, health, and policy, as long as they are not discriminatory in any way. So, Honourable Chair, by way of conclusion, we see this agreement as a basis for engaging in the African Continental Free Trade Area negotiations, which, as you know, are also ongoing. The President signed the African Continental Free Trade Area at the summit in Mauritania on the 1st of July this year. The second point is the ratification will send a very strong signal of South Africa's commitment to regional integration, market integration, industrial development integration, and of course improving infrastructure deficits in the region. It will bring South Africa's exporters a step closer to enjoying preferential treatment in the markets that in the countries that we are negotiating with, and then of course it will provide, as I said earlier, the legal certainty and predictability of markets that we have not had in the past. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you for the time and the preparation of the briefing document to us. We welcome that. Can we, at this time, members, engage with the presentation? I see the Honourable Dikgale, Honourable Faber, and then the Honourable Ntere. Let's take the three of them first, because he's alone. We no, it helps when you have other colleagues in the field that they can help you to capture. So with him being alone, you do have a take. Because what will happen, we'll take the three members and then give you an opportunity to respond. Honourable Dikgale, please.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. It's a goal presented, clear. And as I go through the document, I could notice that the research has been done. And I want to say to the department that I'll be the first person to say your request is in good hands. As long as they will be able to deal with the barriers, Chairperson, I don't think there will be any problem. I was going through the document yesterday. I could notice that they even checked on the issue of the infant ones that will be joining. Well, I went through the countries that signed the agreement. I'm satisfied. My worry is if they won't be able to deal with the challenges, then we'll have a problem. I even noticed that our language is included there, English. Even if normally when you go and attend their conferences, we always hear Portuguese and all these other languages. We don't hear our language, English. But to me, I am giving it a number.
Thank you, Honourable Dikgale. Honourable Faber.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Yes, I would first want to know, we were talking about the Grandpa, for instance. Now, first I want to ask, did you use Grandpa yet? And if it works for you, then how do you know it's substandard? No, I mean, the medication board, don't they look at the quality of these type of things, like Grandpa, for instance, what you mentioned? Because that should be a control measurement by the medicine board. I would like to know the first one on things like that. Then we were talking about how will you be able to monitor third-party involvement? Because you were talking about sugar, for instance. Let's say oil or whatever. How will you be able to determine from which country it comes? Because it can be dumping from countries through a second country towards us. And it can be steel from China, for instance, coming through any other country, dumping it in South Africa, for instance. How will you be able to determine that? Because those countries also would like, when we've got this agreement going, they would also like to do business with us. And via dumping, you know, in business, it's about the money. Show me the money and you get the deal. So I want to know, how will we control that third party? And then I was looking at the protection measurements. How do we protect our market? I know through trade and industry, specifically with the Agoda and these, we are trying with the chicken imports from the US and all these, we're trying to protect our own markets as well. Because we're going to lose jobs in this country if we just get all the imports. I suppose exporting is exactly the same for these other countries. We can export and maybe dump on them. Not that we've got a lot to dump at the moment. But my concern at this moment is definitely, how do we protect our industry here through this third party? Because I'm looking through this, but, you know, implementing, seeing it on paper and implementing it is two different measures. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mark Webb. Then you chip this in. I just want to find out a few things, really. You know, as I was listening to your presentation, this trade agreement, they sound really good, but as a dancer, you know, you are reminded that it's like cha-cha-cha dance. You make one step forward and then two steps backwards. And I'll tell you why I find this trade agreement like cha-cha-cha dance. That is not helping us. Here's the context. The unemployment rate has increased to 27.2, as you know. So one wants to know, what are the benefits and the spin-offs, if any, of these agreements that will impact the lives of our people who are in dire need, who are living in abject poverty? Now, you yourself, you are telling us that it will only be when there are 14 countries that have ratified. And sadly, we have only two countries, Egypt and Uganda, that have ratified. Now, here is my take. We cannot for certain know how do we then get, how long will it take us to get to the level where you have indicated that there will be preferential benefits, where 14 countries, you know, have ratified. Now, that's the dilemma, and I would want you to respond to that. How will this help us? That's one question. The second question is based on the potential threats these trade agreements impose. And it cannot be just a fashion to have trade agreements, but there must be an impact. The impact must be to impact the lives and improve, to impact the lives of our people by improving them, given the dire poverty we have. Now, you have yourself considered that one of the, you know, potential threats here is the influx of dumping of substandard goods. Now, I want to take you back to what, you know, Honorable Faber has said. We have an experience that in the past, you know, the poultry industry has suffered precisely because of the dumping, where we had to eat, you know, our poultry to compete with the substandard chicken from Brazil and other countries. Now, here is my problem with this. You are saying to mitigate this dumping of substandard goods, it can be addressed through effective border management. Now, sir, chief negotiator, let me remind you, a week ago, the chief
the SANDF, that is South African Defence Force, has indicated that they are so seriously under-resourced that they cannot manage our borders. Now, how do you then deal with that? How do you respond to that? It's on public record. It was on EMCA when they were having a pressure. I was watching. You must have seen it so. So I take it that everyone who follows the current affairs should know this. Our borders are at risk because our national defense force cannot protect us because cannot protect our borders because they are seriously under-resourced. That's the concession and the shocking admission we have received from those who should be protecting the integrity of our borders. That is my problem with this agreement. Now, I would want to know, when you say through effective border management, how do you propose to do that when the SANDF has indicated that they can't protect us, protect the integrity of our borders? Lastly, page 12 on the slides, you've spoken about legal opinions from DERCO, DOJ, where they verified compliance and whatnot. Now, through you, Chair, I'm subject to correction here. I am not aware if those legal opinions were shared with us as a committee. And if any other colleague has received them, then maybe I've missed out, but I am not aware. I would want that those documents be shared with us. Again, lastly, on the issue that you have mentioned that I'll come back to this point later. Let me end it there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. That was the three ends. Let me just on the last point that the Honourable Member has raised with regard to the legal opinion say that it's never shared with us. However, the processes that are followed is that the Department of Justice will allocate the appropriate people in the department to look at the agreement, and they are experts on the agreements. And then it also goes to the legal advisors, if need be, within government. And we are always basing our decisions on the fact that we have confidence in the people in the Department of Justice has just looked at that. I don't know even whether the members of DDI have seen those opinions, because you are not legal experts, but you can talk on that. So we have the first hand was just a comment, and then we have the other two. Saroj has just given me here the letter from the Department of Justice to the DG, where they then explain to the DG the details that you're looking for. I don't know, Saroj, to what extent you are able to share this. I'm not sure if the other members want it. Are there any of the other members who want it?
No.
No. Okay. If you could send it to Honorable Mokhwebo. Just a little.
No need.
I need the
copy.
Let's have Mutunene respond to the two sets of questions, please.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions and comments. On the last issue of the legal opinion, the Department of Trade and Industry in this case is a client of the Department of Justice and DERCO, the Chief State Law Advisors. As you just outlined, the Chair, they then issue the legal opinion to the Department as the client. Then the department as a client, it is the DG's and the minister's decision to share the legal opinion. And in this case, we have done so. It is in the pack. So the opinion for those honourable members who would like to have it is available. The DTI is happy to share the opinions. If I may start with the first substantive comment on the example that you made of the grandpa, I think there is a distinction between, at least under international trade law, we distinguish between dumping of products and substandard goods. The context in the grandpa example was substandard goods that are coming in where it is difficult to determine the quality of the good at the border, because the customs authority at the border is not a health expert. So you would then require the medical authorities to examine those products and to give a scientific analysis as to the authenticity of the product. We mention it as a risk precisely because at the border, the customs authority is not equipped for that. It is only when there are specific examples within the market, once the good has entered the market, whether it's grandpa or tobacco, it is only after that in some cases you are able to then say this product is actually substandard. Now, on the third-party involvement, the rules of origin that we have negotiated, as I was saying, part of the objective is to foster industrialization, and the other part is to make sure that third parties don't enjoy the benefits. The customs authorities will have to look at the tariff book that we agreed to, the product-specific tariff book, and there's over 7,000 products. So when the product enters the border, they then look at the tariff book, and they compare what the product in front of them with what has been agreed on the tariff book, and determine whether or not this product meets the specifications that are on the tariff book. If the product doesn't meet the specification, then it is up to the exporter. The onus is on the exporter to prove that actually that product meets the requirements and therefore is able to enjoy the preferential market access. So there is a point at which you rely entirely on customs authorities to do the verification exercise of the goods themselves. To give you an example, South Africa, LG and Samsung, who are incorporated in South Africa, who have a manufacturing plant in Durban, exporting products to Tanzania under SADC preferential trade rules. The Tanzanians refused to recognize the certificate of origin. In other words, they refused to give those televisions that are coming from South Africa to give them preferential market access. They argued that it is because the inputs into the television don't meet the threshold, so they are not South African products. That was their argument. We then, as a department, facilitated for them to come here to South Africa to meet with SARS and to go and undertake a joint verification exercise, which they did last year in September. Subsequent to the joint verification exercise, the Tanzanians wrote an official letter to say they recognize the televisions as South African products under SADC rules of origin and therefore enjoy the market access. So I'm trying to give an illustration of how in practice, how you determine exactly the question that you asked, how do you determine that a product should enjoy preferential market because it comes from the region. That is the process that that we follow, and that is the process that will be followed under this agreement. Now, dumping is, of course, a big problem. And now that we've distinguished dumping from substandard goods, it happens, as you correctly said, Honourable Member, it happens when a country may have excess in a particular product and they send it abroad at a much, much lower cost, impacting negatively on the economy and the competitiveness in those countries. We have very specific rules in the agreement. We have very specific anti-dumping rules and anti-dumping procedures to prevent exactly that and to protect the South African market. And we have ITEC, which is an agency of the DTI, whose legal mandate is to make sure that we enforce our anti-dumping rights under the WTO. And typically what they would do, if there is if there is evidence or an allegation of dumping, they would go to that specific country where the goods are coming from, undertake an investigation, talk to domestic stakeholders in that country, and then issue a report to the Minister of Trade and Industry, or now the Minister of Economic Development, the minister may then decide to impose an anti-dumping tariff to offset the dumping effect on the South African market. So there are legal protections, both in domestic law and also under international trade law. There are protections for to prevent anti-dumping, and if it does happen, to respond to it, if I may put it that way, with a view to mitigating it.
We're not going to have the dialogue on the father. We have a policy in the committee. Okay. When we have a person, the person completes that, and then we engage in another round.
Okay. The other question, Chair, that is related to protection of the South African market is the agreement makes provision for infant industry protection. So where we have specific infant industries, the infant industry is being negatively affected by imports, we can invoke the infant industry protection provision to protect our market. In addition to what I mentioned on anti-dumping, on the trade remedies, subsidies and countervailing measures, and so on. The last question about the unemployment rate, the effect of these agreements on unemployment, and the spillover effects on the economy. The township that I grew up in, that I come from, in Witney, VW has a huge plant. Over 80% of the population of the township is employed at VW. The entire township relies on VW. When we started exporting automobiles under AGOA, it improved unemployment in that township by over 10%. Purely because there was a new market that South Africa was able to export to. That, to me, is a direct impact of a trade agreement on unemployment. I'm not talking statistics. I'm talking about where I live, where I live, my neighbors. So, Chairperson, we would say as a department that we do see that there is a positive impact when South Africa is able to export products, because you have an increased demand of the product, even if you are talking about services. If you go to countries where MTN is, for example, it generates income for the country, the export demand generates more jobs for the country. So the evidence, at least to us as a department, the evidence is there that there is. It may not be as substantial, of course, as we would like, but there is a positive impact on unemployment and the general spillover effects on the economy. And the remittances that come back from South African exporters who do obtain profit margins abroad, that they bring them back into the South African fiscus. A fair comment about only two countries having ratified. Yes, we will only be able to enjoy the benefits once the agreement enters into force. The ratification of an instrument is, of course, an act of sovereignty. That is why we are here today as the DTI to request a parliament to consider exercising sovereignty by ratifying this agreement. That is what other countries are also going to do. So it is entirely upon each country to decide when and how it ratifies the agreement. The only thing we can do is to encourage them and to expedite their ratification. This issue, of course, heads of states, when they convene, they do make an assessment of how many countries have ratified, and they encourage one another to expedite the process. There will be a summit of tripartite free trade area countries in April next year in Rwanda, where this issue is a standing issue on the summit of heads of states. So there will be a report back. So it is something that is being considered. The issue of border management, it is actually SARS that is I'm not sure about fence, but when it comes to goods coming in and out of South Africa, it is SARS, customs authorities. They may, of course, be subject to the overall oversight of at the border of the South African National Defence Force, but the practical consideration of the goods that are coming in and out of South Africa, that is something that our colleagues at SARS, they do that on a day-to-day basis. So I don't know if that was related to SARS or if it was related only to the South African National Defence Force. I think, Chair, if those are all the questions. If I left out a question, it's probably because it was too difficult and I pretended I couldn't hear it. But I think those are all the questions, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think you've done well. Members, allow me to just make two comments. The one is there's a document, two documents, that have been sent to us by Khanif, our researcher. And they are, I don't easily get impressed. Those are really good documents to understand the trade environment. They're a bit of lengthy documents, but very helpful in understanding the space. That's the one. The second one is just on this matter of SARS. I've mentioned to some members already that maybe one day we need to go to the port here in Cape Town to go and see the efficiency that we have there. You know, for a full container, it takes 3 seconds for it to be scanned. And that's SARS equipment. One of those containers, the last time I checked, cost about 20 million rand. One. Not the container, the scanner. Before, it used to take us up to 5 hours to go through a container. Now, it's literally 3 seconds. Everything appears on the screen. And, you know, it's the same like undergoing an X-ray. The information appears there on the screen, and then the officer can immediately check what's that. That's the one. The second element that we need to look at is the arrangement that we have with shipping companies. Shipping companies have a legal responsibility to to know what it is that they are exporting and what it is that they are importing. And there's legal documents to that effect that they must sign. Just a few years ago in SARS, what we did there while I was working in SARS was to say that let's look at the possibility of even looking at the transportation companies, where you will say to a transport company, you take responsibility for this consignment that you're carrying. If you carry a clean consignment, we will do random checks. Then you're okay. The minute we catch you with a consignment that is not in line with the documentation that you have, we take away your transportation license. Now, those are the type of things that has started happening a few years ago. I don't know where we are on that. Just a final point on that very same matter is then to say that at the borders, we have SARS, we have the Department of Home Affairs, we also have the South African Police Services, and we then have, maybe not at the post itself, but on the borders broadly speaking, the South African National Defence Force. What we find has happened, particularly when we look at some of the fake goods and illicit goods that's coming into the country, we've dealt effectively with that. Just to conclude on that matter, honourable members, I am always following and very impressed at what is happening at Owa Tambo International Airport. The amount of drugs that we have confiscated at the airport is unbelievable. And these smugglers have sophisticated ways in which they're trying to bring the drugs into the country. I remember there was one incident where they bought pistons of a car and the drugs was in the piston. But still, we caught them. So our technology to then ensure that we're not going to have those type of trades messing up the agreement is big. I think that it might just be helpful at the final point to remind ourselves that the biggest threat here can be South Africa. Because South Africa has the ports and we have the airports. If we look at our neighbors within SADC, Botswana doesn't have it. They have no ports. Lesotho has no ports. Swaziland has no ports. Right? Namibia has a port, but we have a very good relationship with Namibia on that. The same applies to Mozambique. Remember when we were in the Kruger, they showed us that short route there to Mozambique. But one of the things that's happening there is when you go there, you'll find that it is being patrolled. And the reason for the patrol is not only to protect the animals, but also to make sure that I can't just drive on that road with my truck. They will stop me and question what is the content. If I don't have papers, they confiscate. So I thought it's important just to put ourselves at rest because we don't want you to approve this. Honorable Khai was the next hand. Let's see the others. Honorable Nsanga. Are those the last two?
Okay.
Oh, then we'll come back to Honorable Father. Honorable Khai, Nsanga, and Father.
No, thank you very much, sir. Thank you for the responses and also the presentation. I think most of the questions I had have been asked by other honorable members, and they have been responded to. But also, I just want to say that perhaps that we need to follow up on the statement that was made by Honorable Kwebu about the national, South African National Defence Force, to clarify this point. I mean, this committee is live. On TV. So we should not be making statements that are misleading to the public. So I want to request that if on behalf of the committee that you follow this that statement with the Department of Defense, so that whether the statement that Honorable Marvel is making, whether it's true that South Africans are not safe because the SANDF doesn't have capacities and the resources all those kind of statements, because they are misleading, you know, to the public. Because people can just throw statements in, because they know that they're not going to be challenged. They have not read that kind of statement. So it's easy to just throw a statement, because no one is going to contest it, because they have not read it. So that's why I want you, on behalf of this committee, to follow up that statement. But coming to the question, the out of the 26 countries, though the memorandum says 27, what about these four? Why they have not yet signed the agreement, let alone the ratification, but just the agreement itself? Why they have not, and which are these countries? Excuse me. And I had a question on the effect on job losses, because we had a similar situation when we got our freedom in 1994. All of a sudden, we relaxed the tariffs, and there was a lot of goods coming, particularly from China, you know, that caused particularly the textiles and the clothing industry in South Africa. How do we avoid such a situation? But I know you're saying that we can invoke a particular mechanism with regard to the infant, but generally, what about the other, not just the infant, if you can respond to that. But also, how do we avoid a situation where we are seen as a big brother, the point that you're also making, that some other countries don't have ports and so forth. How do we avoid that situation? But also, we might be effective to a certain extent in South Africa when it comes to customs. How do we ensure that our partners in the agreement also have a similar effective mechanism when it comes to the customs, and also when it comes to good quality infrastructure? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mhlanga.
No, thank you, Chair. Perhaps I must also sing the very same song that has been sung by our members to welcome the presentation that is properly prepared. Although, Chair, someone was just a handicap of some kind, I couldn't go to my emails because of the technical issue. I couldn't go to the document that we got them earlier, but yeah, I think I must adapt. Because if I don't adapt, then I will die. But Chair, my question is, as we all are aware, that South Africa supports states that intervene on economic issues, developmental economic issues. There's one question, perhaps, Chair, that I want to be cleared, to be put at a certain on this tripartite agreement. Our relationships, working relationship on these forums that we have in Africa, not only in Africa and the world as a whole. Just to make mention the World Bank, what is our relationship as we go on these deliberations? On the International Monetary Fund, there is the trade, the tripartite trade agreement, also taking consideration of the monitoring fund issues, the international monitoring fund issues. Of course, we also, someone spoke about Langasta plan of action. No one, actually, it was in my mind. What is our relationship? No one spoke about this Langasta plan of action. What is the relationship of this tripartite alliance with the Langasta plan, because it was also made to also network Africa in terms of trade and so on. Your African Economic Community Forum, because we do have these community economic forums that are being established since 1960 to date. What is our relationship as we go further on doing this agreement? And after being cleared on this, yes, I also forgotten the issue of NEPAD, because NEPAD it was also playing a role in terms of networking Africa on issues of trade and the other relevant issues. while we sign this capital trade agreement, do we also take consideration of progress made by NEPAD? The agreements on tariffs and non-tariff issues that are being signed by the AU, while we are entering on this agreement, do we consider those? Because are already there are institutions that were made in place to network Africa on particular special economic zones or forums. I think after being cleared on this one, Chair, then therefore I will also say, Chair, I would of course move a motion that we ratify the South Africa on the trade. Thank you, Chair.
We'll come to the last point. Let me touch on the point that you have started with, because I want to reiterate what I said earlier on. Those two documents, it's parliamentary documents from our research unit and from somebody else in Parliament as well. The two briefing documents answers most of the questions that you are raising now. Which emphasizes the importance thereof, that we need to look at all those things within the context, particularly as we're going into the ACFTA now as well. Honourable Pabu, you wanted to follow up? Then we'll have Honourable Makwebu for the last question.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, when I was talking about the dumping and obviously extensive quantities of products that can actually come into our market by protecting our own market. If you look, and this is why, yes, we're looking at this documentation that we get, we actually read through them now and then, and our state law advisor did say, if we look at this, that on Article 11, the elimination of quantitative restrictions. And this is the bit of a loophole that I'm scared of, Chairperson. If you start to look at it, it says tripartite member partner states shall not impose quantitative restrictions on imports or exports in trade with other tripartite member partner states, except as otherwise provided for in Article X1. And then it is about the World Trade Organization agreements, etc. But on the one side, it's saying we will not impose quantitative restrictions except for this. Now, this is creating loopholes, Chairperson, and I would like to know, should you not perhaps look at that article to make it fail-safe? Because that can be a big loophole to say, but we're not imposing quantitative, because you cannot now, if you're going to have to go and look at all products, it will take you years to identify all these products that might have a negative effect on our economy. So I would perhaps ask if the state law advisor can perhaps look at this Article 11, the elimination of quantitative restrictions, because I really do believe that that can become a catch-22 situation at some stage. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Then I notice that I will be the last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I just wanted to commit myself to assist you in the suggested route by Honorable Khayi that the statement I may have made may be misleading. Now, I want to say it on national television today, if there's camera running, that I stand by my statement, and I have not in any way misled anybody. I spoke the truth to power, and that's when I leave the matter there, because it's got a tendency, or it may be construed, you know, to cast aspersions on my integrity. Hence, I'm saying I am willing to go that road if this matter is a matter that, as it has been suggested, I have no objection to that. I'll cooperate with that. But I stand by my statement, every word I said. And here is the context of this. The issue I was talking about is because in the presentation, the department itself said to mitigate the potential threats of dumping and substandard goods, they will ensure that the borders of our country are protected and they're intensified and they're managed properly. I was responding in the same vein to say, look, are you aware that recently on the 31st of July, and I'm giving you the exact date, but I just went to find this information, that 31st of July, General Soli Shoke admitted that they understand their role, that it is to protect the integrity of our borders. Because an example was made that it is easier to, you know, for people from Mozambique to come to our borders because the fence is damaged. And he considered to that, that we are aware of those challenges, but we are seriously under-resourced. Now, I was responding to that to say,
if they are mentioning the issue of our, you know, the management of our borders, are they aware? Are they working with the department? Or in what way are they cooperating or working with the department to deal with that? So I'm on record on that, and I want to leave this matter there. But I am not withdrawing one word I said. Thank you.
Honourable members, I'm going to ask that we not engage on that matter any further. We have a separate select committee that deals with matters of defence and security and is complicated matters. We are looking at trade, and we're looking at the trade agreement and what are the risks at our borders for the inflow of goods outside of the formal trade environment. And if you wish to, you can respond on that part of it. The Honourable High, please.
Okay, I raised my hand. I knew that they were going to have on this issue. The point I was making, because he was general, he was not specific on this issue of Mozambique. He was general that South Africans are not safe, because the NDF is under-capacitated. That's why I'm saying that if you can follow up on this matter. So there was no need for him to come back until you then come back to the committee to report on this particular issue. There's a tendency, you know, of coming with all the stumbling blocks when it comes to matters that are brought to the committee by government to ask questions that are intended to block, not necessarily to be clarified. There's that tendency generally. You know, some questions, some quarters.
I don't understand.
We're asking questions so that we are clarified, not that we want to create a stumbling block. So, but
I don't understand about that. I've ruled on that. Honorable Mketwa, are you covered? Let's have your response, and after you, I'll just make some summary remarks as well. Please, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members, again for the comments and the questions. I think, Honourable Chair, you put it correctly. When it comes to goods, it is SARS that is concerned at the border. That is the authority, and goods that come into the border through trade agreements. The authority there is SARS. The countries who have not signed are Lesotho, Libya, Eritrea, and Mozambique. There are various reasons why countries don't sign. Some may say that their legal processes take quite a long time. In some cases, there may be change of governments, and the new government decides to take a different approach. We don't know the specific reasons. We can only speculate. Regarding Article 11, the general rule, Honourable Member, is under international trade law is that there are no quantitative restrictions. The exception is when you experience import surges. You then are able to invoke a safeguard, what we call a safeguard, which gives you the legal cover that you require for departing from the general rule. So the general rule is that we don't have restrictions unless there are certain conditions such as import surges. And then there is a criteria that is set that you have to meet for you to actually be able to impose those restrictions. And that is the practice in the WTO and in this in the tripartite area. The second question, the other question on goods that came, and I think this is a very, very legitimate concern about what do we do, how do we handle sensitive sectors in the negotiations. One, there is, as I said, there's an infant industry clause. Two, there is what we call trade remedies, anti-dumping provisions, countervailing provisions, where if you have reason to believe a particular country is importing subsidized goods from itself, you can take action. And then of course there's a safeguard that I just mentioned, where there are drastic import surges, you are then able to invoke a specific provision of the agreement. In this negotiation and in the African Continental Free Trade Area negotiation, South Africa has identified a number of sensitive sectors. One of those is textiles and clothing through the NEDLAC consultative process. And so what we would, as negotiators, make sure happens is that those products that are identified as sensitive, the liberalization is over a substantially longer period to allow the sector to make adjustments where it needs to. Or, of course, in some cases, there is a complete exclusion of a particular sector or a particular product, depending on its level of sensitivity. So we do take into account that there will be cases where there are vulnerabilities in the economy, and of course those vulnerabilities are directly linked to people's jobs, to job creation. So we have to take account of that, and we have to carve out those sectors. I think there was also a comment around infrastructure. The infrastructure programs that will unfold under this agreement will largely be those that have already been agreed to by SADC heads of states. It will be a question of expediting the implementation. And then, of course, there are some infrastructure projects that South Africa was undertaking independent of any regional integration effort. But those will be complementary. NEPAD is a big part of both the tripartite free trade area and the African continental free trade area, because if you look at the various programs of NEPAD, particularly in relation to industrial development and infrastructure development, we are piggybacking. We are standing on the shoulders of NEPAD. So we have recognized that where there are existing programs of the African Union, we need to complement those existing programs. So it may not be word for word expressed in the agreement, because it's a legal agreement. It's difficult to express that kind of linkage. But from a practical standpoint, we take into account the projects of NEPAD and complement them in terms of the work program that we will develop here in the tripartite free trade area negotiations. And I think you are correct, Honourable Chair, that substantial progress has been made by NEPAD, and so we need to build on that and the progress that has been made. We did not discuss IMF and World Bank because it is largely outside of the DTI's mandate. It is National Treasury. The only linkage that you may observe in the agreement is when we make reference to balance of payments problems, and that where a country experiences balance of payments problems, you then are provided flexibility in or you can, for an interim period, you can stop your liberalization, you can suspend your liberalization, and that condition of balance of payments is, of course, determined by the World Bank or the IMF or either or both of them. So that is the only linkage that we make. Beyond that, we don't we don't make a linkage. The last comment, Honorable Chair, was on the African Continental Free Trade Area. And again, the Honorable Member is correct. That negotiation is proceeding quite rapidly, and South Africa is fully engaged. As I said, the President was there. He signed the agreement. He was invited as a keynote speaker at the AFCFTA Business Forum. So we are fully engaged in that process. And the idea is that the tripartite will feed into the African Continental Free Trade Area, and that there will be complementarity, because the African Continental Free Trade Area moves beyond these three regions. It reaches also into West Africa. So it gives us yet another opportunity for market expansion, whether you are talking about South African investment of capital or trading in goods. It gives us it enables us to diversify our export market away from the traditional markets. And as you know, the effect of, for example, on the Eurozone, the effect of the sovereign debt crisis was particularly adverse on countries that rely on that market for exports. So when the demand was subdued due to the sovereign debt crisis, we were affected because we rely significantly. So we have to diversify our export markets. Honorable Chair, I think those were all the questions in this round. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much. We appreciate that. Honourable Members, we are at this stage where we need to look at the report of the Select Committee of Trade and International Relations on the agreement establishing a tripartite free trade area among the common market for Eastern and Southern Africa, the East African Community and the Southern African Development Community, dated the 8th of August 2018. That the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations, having considered the request for approval by Parliament on the agreement establishing a tripartite free trade area about the common market for Eastern and Southern Africa, the East African Community, and the South African Development Community, recommends that the House, that's the NCOP, in terms of Section 231, bracket 2 of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. Can this report be considered by the House? Anybody against that? We all agree. Thank you very much. So we are unanimous.
You're a fast speaker. I'm so fast. No. I was like putting my hand up to talk to you.
What did you want to do, Honourable Farmer?
I just say that with the concerns that we have, that we've raised, I agree in totality with it, just for the concerns that we have.
No, you see, Honourable Farmer, it's good that you raised that, because, Honourable Members, now we've dealt with that. Let me say to you that I have here, you see, all these things here, I received yesterday. It's dated the 20th of June. You can look at the size of it. It's all coming from the chairperson of the NCOP, the Honorable Modise, related to memoranda of agreement as well as legislation. Fortunately for us, there's just the one piece of legislation that we have to look at for now, which is the National Gambling Bill of 2018. But then I just thought that I should present to you, or just read to you for information. I'm not asking you to make a decision on this. There is the agreement that we have with the United Nations Relief and Work Agency of Palestine on funding that the African Renaissance Fund, the ARF, is already giving for humanitarian relief in Gaza. But we give this money to the United Nations organization that's working there. That's one. And we have the agreements and the notes and everything there. Then we have the second one, which is the cooperation agreement between South Africa and the Republic of Guinea, the Republic of Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic, and then also... Oh, yeah, there are memorandums of agreement. I'm not going to read all of them to you now, but to say there are 14 of them. I think there's a mistake, because from number 24 it jumps to page 20, to number, from 14 it jumps to 24, so there's 10 that was not included yet, but we have, let's safely say, 14 memoranda of agreement. Now, the procedure, honorable members, is that in terms of section 231(2) of the Constitution, the executive can engage in these memoranda, and they merely send them to us for agreement. Right? But what we are also reading in section 231(2) is what then happens in the case of the previous one, is we present it to the House.
Yes. Yeah. And the vote will be in the House.
Yeah. But on some of them we may find, honorable father, that we don't even vote on it in the House. We just present it. But you see, we're trying to keep this democracy as participatory as we can. And therefore we say, even on things that we don't need to vote on, if you look at Section 75 legislation, we do the same thing. We take it to our House as well. You have the last one.
Chairperson, yes, as I say, we definitely do not disagree, but just that the concerns that we've raised to the department, that can be looked in. I think it's just a matter of not, you know, because when opposition talks, it's usually you are against it, and it's not that we're against it, we were just raising some concerns. Thanks, Chair.
We appreciate that. I think it's important for all of us that if we have these things, that we engage, interrogate it thoroughly, and it's not the responsibility of the opposition only to look critically and to raise concerns. I think the other members have done the same.
Haven't we seen that? Yeah. This is what I'm trying to say.
Honourable members, the last item for us to look at then was to look at the minutes of the last meeting. Now, if I can have your attention. The minutes... I've looked at it. Now, ordinarily what would happen, the minutes would come to me first, before they are distributed. It didn't happen with that minutes of the 20th of June. But when I look at the minutes, there are, on the last page, two concerns that I have, which I've raised one with Lupeka. So can I, in the light of that, then appeal, honorable members, that we don't adopt the minutes here now, but if we leave it so that I can have that cleared with Quebecca, and then we will recirculate an edited draft of that minutes. We're not changing the content. It's just some topographical things, and I can be open with you and say the other matter that we have is we've agreed that this committee, Quebecca, that if there are amendments to the minutes of the previous meetings, those amendments must be kept. It mustn't just say the minute was accepted with amendments. We must show the amendments in the minute. And I'm missing that in the last minute. So we'll just rectify that or correct that and then bring it back to you. Honourable members, next week we have the NRCS doing a presentation to us on Wednesday. Members who were in the programming committee this morning, thank you very much. Would confirm to you that we are sitting next week, Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah.
So we don't want to lose any Wednesday morning. So we will have our normal meeting of both the select committees on Tuesday and on Wednesday next week. We trust that this Women's Day would be one that would really help us to also discern what we can do to ensure that women occupy the rightful place within South African society and do not suffer the type of abuses that our country is pleasantly plagued with. Enjoy the celebrations. All the best.
No, when you have don't hear
people that can be touching things, put the thing in front of us and read it.